Senator Phillips, Senator Torgerson. We have two bills to consider today. It's my intent to move 289, if it's the will of the committee, and 296. We're going to hear our testimony on it, and then we'll bring it back up at a later date after we talk about amendments and some other things. I think there'll be additional work that has to be done on that. Anyway, House Bill 289 is an act relating to the effective date of a municipal manager plan that has been adopted and the effective date of repeal of the manager plan. Prime sponsor is Representative Stevens, who is here. He'll tell us all about this, I guess. For the record, the committee requested his staff do this, but she turned she turned us down.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did my best to get here, but Mr. Chairman, this is a cleanup bill of state regulations, and what it does is to make it clear to the voter to what position they are electing someone, and also make it clear to the candidates to what position they're running for. At the present time, there can be a certain amount of confusion when an election takes place to change the form of government, the form of municipal government, at the same time that we're also electing a mayor to a position. So there's some confusion there. I actually sort of imagine a situation where a petition has been filed in a municipality with the manager form of government to change to a strong mayor form of government, and at the same time, we're also trying to elect a mayor. In that situation, Mr. Speaker, the voters really are not sure whether they're electing a position, a mayor for a strong mayor or more of a ceremonial mayor position. So there's a certain amount of confusion there, Mr. Chairman. This does not in any way take away any rights of the public to change the form of government. Continues giving them that right. That can be done by either a special election or actually an assembly can make that request also to have a special election. What this bill does is to add a year in between that change of government. So if the people vote to change the government, you leave the mayor in that position for 1 year and give time to make that adjustment. So what HB 289 does is to protect the rights of the voters to change the form of government, to make sure the voters are not confused as to what position they are electing someone, and also make sure that the candidates know what position they are actually going to be elected to. I'd be glad to answer any questions if you have them.
Can you by ordinance take care of the timeline by ordinance that's adopted to switch from one to the other, or by voter? I mean, in other words, you put it on the ballot. To switch your form of government, whichever way you want to go, the effective date of that switch, isn't that something you can do by petition?
I think the community could do that.
But we're precluding that to happen, but it'd have to do 1 year, is what we're saying here.
Right. It's sort of a balancing act because you've got, there truly is confusion as to what person, the individual you're electing, whether you're electing them to a full-time job that pays $70,000 and requires them to, $70,000, requires them to run a company, an organization, a municipality that has 120 or some employees. And that's considerably different than electing someone to a ceremonial mayor's position in which your job is to run the meetings and have a manager run the government.
And I agree with that. But I'm just curious about the power of the electorate to pick their own time to have that done if they wanted to. And apparently we're not going to let them do that with this bill.
Well, my experience is that wasn't the option that was offered to the public in the elections I've been involved in. Yeah.
I've not seen it either offered. I'm just a question. I don't have a problem with the bill. I just wanted to discuss that. Senator Phillips.
Can you just give me a abbreviated history of this? So what caused this?
Well, I can tell you the specific case that occurred in Kodiak, that we were in the process of changing, there was a petition to change the form of government from a
their mind to...
Seminole mayor to a strong mayor. And it threw everyone into confusion at the election, because not only were you deciding what form of government you wanted to have, but you were also deciding who would be the mayor. And the confusion was, if you passed it, if you decided to change to a strong mayor form of government, then suddenly the person you were electing for mayor would have to be the full-time strong mayor. And that I don't, I'm sure in your experience, Senator, running for, if you've been involved in local politics, you...
government, so that's why I'm asking you for this.
Well, for myself, for example, I ran as a, and was elected as the mayor of Kunigan Borough. At the same time, I had a full-time job. I wasn't looking for another full-time job. And if, for example, if I had been elected at the same time they changed the form of government to a strong mayor, I would not have been able to serve, or I would have had to quit my job. So it's an unfair position to put the person up for election in to have to make that decision. Not knowing really what you're running for.
And why was it not clear? Because of state statutes?
No, it was not clear because the people had not changed the form of government, and that was a part of the election that was going on at the same time it was time to elect a mayor to a three-year term. So they just happened to be in sequence that people decided they want to change government at the same time the mayor's position was up for election. Yeah.
I was just trying to focus in. You know how it is here.
Okay. Any other questions?
Need a motion?
Yep. Oh, wait a minute. Let me see. Is there anybody, I haven't looked around. Anybody else want to testify on the bill?
They do.
Anybody on teleconference?
I have the Haynes volunteers. I have two people, but I'm not sure which one they want.
That's not this one, I don't think.
Lottery, yeah. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'll move sponsor substitute HB 289 amended.
Okay, motion to move the bill with individual recommendations. Is there objection?
With the accounting, or with the accompanying, zero fiscal note.
Okay. Hearing no objection, that bill will move on to probably rules, I imagine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Phillips, committee.
Yep, good luck.
Okay. yeah, good luck. You have to explain that again.
yeah, and I'll make a request, too.
All right, next we have House Bill 296. This is an act, where does the bill go? An act relating to mergers and consolidations of municipalities. Prime sponsor is Representative Whitaker. For the committee, we have the bill. We have it's not a proposed amendment yet. It's just an amendment for us to look at to see what we want to do. The rumor of the amendment has got folks that want to talk to us about the amendment and its impacts that they might have. So we're probably just going to struggle through this and take the testimony. I don't intend to pass the bill out today. I want to get everything on record. We got some stuff from Boundary Commission that I just got in, haven't read myself. But I want to start the debate going now. So if you want to start us out, the prime sponsor is Representative Whitaker, and you will walk us through what we're trying to do with the bill.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, my staff will be back.
Oh, fine.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Before you is House Bill 296. From time to time, we get the pleasure of taking the high road, and House Bill 296 allows us to do that. The long and the short of it is that it does two things. One, in reference to mergers and consolidations and petition efforts to bring about a merger or consolidation. The bill requires a time period of 365 days as opposed to a simply open-ended time period when signatures can be collected on a petition. That's the easy part. The more difficult part is that allows us to take the high road, and that relates to section number two. That essentially defends a basic tenet of democracy, and hence the notion of the high road. That basic tenet is the right to self-determination, not for an individual, but for a community. And it does that by requiring that majorities of each municipal unit associated with a consolidation or merger approve separately before a merger or consolidation may occur. That's the essence of the bill. The amendment that you are considering makes that very clear. Much to our surprise, after having worked this bill through the House, passed it through the House, we became aware that the language may not have accomplished that which we had intended. Tam Cook is here. She can explain to you the reasons for that. But nonetheless, the amendment for you, before you, allows the bill to accomplish that for which it was intended. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm available for questions.
Okay, I think most of them will be on the amendment. But is there any questions on what we've got so far? Senator Osterman.
Do you want to accept the bill and do the amendment first, and everybody can talk about the amendment, or you just want to have this?
You can move the amendment if you like, if that's what you're thinking. Then
we're going to discuss it.
We can always hold the bill with the pending amendment for the next committee meeting if we don't want to adopt it today. So.
Right.
Okay. Go ahead then.
Okay, I would move amendment number one.
Okay. The motion has been made to adopt amendment number one, and I will object just because we want to discuss this. Amendment number one is on the table.
That would be, if it's approved, be a committee substitute, right?
Right. Okay. Right. Okay, maybe we'll listen to Tam, if that's all right.
I'm surprised Fred Dyson didn't get a hold of this bill.
After Mrs. Cook, we'll go to the teleconference, and I think we got most everybody in Haines that wants to discuss this, so go ahead, Ms. Cook.
Hi, I'm Tam Cook with the Legislative Affairs Agency, and the amendment that you have, I think, corrects what was probably originally intended and which I failed to achieve as a drafter, and maybe adds another aspect to the bill that I had never comprehended at all, and that is that rather than having a merger or consolidation subject to approval just separately by each municipality involved, as the bill was drafted, which I think was inadvertent, and I believe it was my failure to understand. The real concern with respect to municipalities that consolidate or merge with a city that is within the municipal boundary is that the vote occur not on a municipal-wide area in the sense that the borough, of course, includes the city, but that the vote be approved separately by the city within the borough and by the borough population that is outside of the city. And it is that I erred as far as achieving in the original bill. In addition, it became apparent that there was a desire to, merger and consolidation can include any number of municipalities. It's not restricted to just two municipalities that are choosing to join in some fashion or other. A merger or consolidation can include any number. So for example, a borough might have more than one city included in a petition that is proposed to be merged with that borough. And in those cases, this under this amendment, the result would be that if any one of the cities disapproved the entire package, the package would fall. So that this would place a burden on the individuals that are putting together a merger petition, essentially to ascertain whether the individual cities that are going to join in this situation, whether there is support within each of those cities for the merger proposition. As I see it, that would probably be the practical result of this amendment.
So what would we have if I guess, just so I'm clear, that merger consolidation would mean the entire sum. It wouldn't be like a borough or a city trying to take some land from the borough, but not the entire borough.
No, a merger occurs when two municipalities essentially join together, and one of them gives up its identity and becomes completely the other one. A consolidation occurs when two or more municipalities come together, and both of them may change their identities and form yet a different municipality. So for example, you can get two boroughs that consolidate, say two second-class boroughs that consolidate and elect to form a single first-class borough. Or you can get a city that merges with a borough and it ceases to be a city, it may be outside the borough originally, for example, or inside the borough, and becomes simply part of the borough without changing the classification of the borough at all.
Let me give you an example. Two cities want to merge, but there's some borough land in between their boundaries. So now we have three affected governments. How do we handle that one?
In a case, I don't know. I don't know how they would, I don't know how two cities could merge in that case without something being done with the land in between them. And the borough in this case would not be merging with the cities. It would be retaining its own identity. So it would not be properly a municipality that is merging in that case. It seems to me that you're pretty well faced with a question of one or the other of the cities annexing some of that borough land in order to make that that merger work, operate.
And also, I'm pretty familiar with this because of our Homer annexation issues that we went through, but there are two ways to form municipalities, or to join. One would be through this petition process, which we're affecting now, and the other would be a direct request to the Boundary Commission and go through let the Boundary Commission. This does not affect the Boundary Commission's power under that particular form.
Mr. Chair, no, this doesn't. This bill only amends the statutes that deal with local option mergers and consolidations. The local option mergers are authorized, essentially, they can be authorized in the Constitution according to procedures established by the legislature, and they involve basically a local effort to achieve a boundary change. Those sorts of boundary changes do not go to the legislature for ratification in the way that local boundary commission initiated changes do.
Senator Osterman, I wanted to just ask
using my community as an example, Pontiac Island Borough, it's got six or seven communities within the borough. The city of Kodiak and the borough had one time talked about consolidation as a unit. Now, if somebody wanted to drag the rest of the six village communities into that discussion, and one of them or two of them decided with the vote, no, they didn't want to, could the rest of them consolidate under this, or would that two that opted out destroy the whole?
If I may, through the chair, Senator, if this amendment were adopted and enacted into law, the petition itself, which might include, say, six separate little cities within a borough, the petition itself, if it did include each city, any single city, if the vote failed within that city, would prevent the merger from occurring at all. It would not preclude whoever it is that is sponsoring the merger effort from filing another petition that leaves that city out of the next vote. And that would be the only solution. So basically, in answer to your question, yes, if there were six cities involved in a question of merging with a borough, in that case, and one of the six declined, the voters declined in one of the six cities, then the merger would not take place under this amendment.
Is there a way of writing that would allow the merger to go forward without the single city that decided no?
Of course, that would be an alternative.
Without going through the whole process again.
That could be the alternative. On the right, that this an amendment, that would be a different policy choice. That certainly could be a result.
That could happen based upon what we have drafted.
No, what you have in front of you will not permit that to occur. What you have in front of you makes the policy choice that if a city is included within a petition as one of the municipalities that is the subject of the merger or consolidation, and the majority of the voters in that city do not approve it, then the entire merger does not go forward under this amendment, under this language. That would be the policy choice. So essentially, as I say, there would be a burden placed on the originators of that petition to ascertain the probability of its survival with respect to including all these different municipalities.
Then could this be redrafted to say something in the fact that two or more or whatever if one opted out, then the thing could go forward, rather than just saying that it's all done if one opts. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Sure, it could be drafted that way, so that the result was that if one municipality of whatever type, be they a variety of boroughs or a variety of cities, elected not, if the petition failed in with respect to that one municipality, that the result, but passed with respect to others, that the result would be the merger consolidation of only those municipalities within which it was approved. It could be drafted that way.
With the option, I was thinking, I wish with the option of all or none, or could we do it both ways, so that the petitioner could make the option when he put it in? And here's what I'm thinking. You have one city that's the cash cow of the area, mm-hmm. and everybody wants to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. So everybody else votes, and they vote no, the cash cow, the one that has the highest assessed value, and they vote no, and then the other merger goes forward.
Right.
But could we word it to where it would be the option of the petitioner, whether it was take it or leave it, or just the willing parties can merge?
You can, and I think that, Senator, that you have put your finger on probably the policy problem with taking the approach that Senator Osterman advocated, is that if you set up a system where it's an automatic matter that one municipality would not be included within a merger consolidation, you might set up a situation where perhaps the merger consolidation ought not to go forward if a critical party declined to participate. And with respect to making it at the option of the petitioner, certainly it could be drafted that way. On the other hand, if you take the approach that the amendment has now, there's nothing that precludes another petition from occurring, leaving out the area that disapproved, if in fact you still had a viable merger issue. There's also nothing that precludes a petitioner from filing, in fact, a number of separate petitions if they're confronted with this possibility, and yet the petitioner feels that a merger in a number of configurations would be workable. So I don't know that you actually need to build in that kind of flexibility at the onset for the petitioner, but it could certainly be done.
Mr. Phillips.
Okay. For the representative, more.
Well, yeah. When
you're finished.
Just come up and join Tam.
I'm going to try to formulate the question right now, because really I sort of can't relate to this because we're unified anyway, but there is a similar situation in the municipality of Anchorage with service area concepts. And I'm trying to formulate the question. Would there be, in the other parts of the state, would there be possibilities of having a hillside situation where one area of a community or area is using the services of, let's say, in this case, it was hillside using city police without paying for it? Now, would that same set of circumstances be applied to something like this? And I can see the argument, it's six of one, half a dozen of another. I can see areas outside of a community that wants to consolidate, but these guys coming in, using the services, and then head back home and not paying for it. And on the other hand, I also understand that's the half a dozen. The six aside is that self-determination. I see that too, because I'm placed with that, living where I'm at in Eagle River with the grizzly bear Anchorage breathing down our necks. So. I can see it both ways right now, because we had a hell of a time trying to get the hillside to start paying for these services that they were using. You understand what I'm saying?
I do, and I'll take an intent stab at it, and then if you so desire, I'm sure Tam can give you a more legally correct answer.
Right.
It's not the intention that this bill be confused or viewed as being relative to service areas.
I understand it.
It relates.
I was just using that as an example.
Okay. It is not the intention that it would be confused with that. And having said that, I think there is a more definitive answer.
Yeah, what I'm thinking of, there might be areas in the state where you have a community that wants to consolidate. The Homer situation was probably the closest example I'm aware of that apply a set of circumstances that apply to this thing here. where you had an area that apparently looked like to me they're using some city services without paying for it, yet they didn't want to be consolidated and get some revenues for these services these people are using without paying for it. And it's the same thing, it's the same concept with the service areas in Anchorage, you know. So, like I said, I can see both sides of the argument, but what I'm afraid of is that if you have this, then you have one area enjoying the benefits that somebody else is paying for, and they don't want to be consolidated, because it only takes one out of three combination of votes to say no, and everything goes by the wayside. And I think you know what I'm trying to say here.
I do, and I agree with you. That is a concern through the chair. It is not our intent to be obstructionist. It is our intent to ensure that each community have the right to determine its own path. Now, that's an easy knoll for me to ascend.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so that does that mean the Chilkoot Charlie's slogan? That's self-determination?
Chilkoot Charlie had several slogans. Senator,
steal
I'm not
from
sure
the
which
guy
one now you're referring
to. Well, to me.
It's different than what you're saying, because each body would have a reason to vote no, yes or no.
Right.
If one turned it down, it's not going to happen.
Right.
So I don't think it's the same as Hillside or Home or Annexation.
Yeah, well, my fear, I'm just trying to formulate a situation in the state where one group of people, that because they're outside the boundaries, are taking benefits of everybody else who's paying for it. Roads, a police service, fire, whatever, parks, libraries, swimming pools.
Senator, if I might, I think at that point we are in the gray area between annexation and consolidation and
right.
merging,
right.
And it is not a perfect black and white situation,
right.
But I think what you are in referring to is a situation that might be more appropriate to annexation as opposed to two separate municipal entities, which is the focus of the bill.
I only know it too, the Haynes probably, because
yeah.
they're right there on top of each other with the third class borough
right.
and city
right.
and Ketchikan, with the city and borough of Ketchikan and Saxman all being within a stone's throw of each other. No, North Star Borough, City of Fairbanks, but they've got North Pole in there. I suppose those two might, but then the borough would have to, the borough, what would happen in a case like that if the city and the borough consolidated and there are other cities outside it? Mm-hmm. I guess.
The other cities could continue to function as cities.
Function as normal.
Right. When you're dealing with a situation where the municipality is willing to take the step to go to home rule, of course, then you get into unification is the appropriate. The merger and consolidation tends to come up more where you've got a variety of municipalities that are not prepared to take the step of going to a home rule situation. They don't want to adopt a charter.
My preference would be that the options are within the amendment that allows the different options to take place, whether it be everybody is in or out, or whether two could be in and one could be out, or five could be in and one could be out, you know, give them the option to roll through rather than saying that it's all or nothing and you go back and then you have to have another election and another process of going through the whole process, because I think once, if the people have the option of getting in or out, as long as there's more than two, obviously, then I think that option should be within it so that everybody can have that say. But I'm going to ask my preference when we come back with this.
Mr. Chairman, the petitions, do we have Boundary Commission online, by any chance?
I don't believe so, they're in Haynes.
Is the petition have to be approved by the Boundary Commission before it goes to a vote?
I think it does. It is subject to a Boundary Commission.
One of my concerns with Senator Osterman is, first of all, I agree that the petitioner should have an option of how big he wants this to be, whether or not, how many communities he wants to have it in. But we have to be careful that
the middle community drops out and the two on the other sides agree, then it becomes a petition that's not legal, right?
Because right.
You got no man's land in between that.
Well, with respect to that issue, I recall that a merger and consolidation petition, like almost all the other local action boundary changes, does go both to review by the department and to the local boundary commission. The local boundary commission actually has to hold a hearing on it and make a finding, if I recall, that not only is the petition appropriate and the resulting reconfigured municipality meets the standards for incorporation, for example, of that type of municipality. But furthermore, I think that the commission has to make a best interest finding, also a specific finding that the merger or consolidation is in the best interest of the state. So there is, in fact, a considerable layer of administrative review that goes on with respect to a local option, merger and consolidation. In addition, I believe the local boundary commission has the authority to make changes to a petition to accomplish those purposes, if it chooses to do so, before the petition is then submitted to the voters. So there is a considerable level of oversight.
Further question?
Senator Rossman.
I'm assuming that the way this bill is written, the effective date is 90 days after the governor signs it?
That is correct. And there is...
That is your intent?
That is not my intent. My concern is with the Haines situation. The intention of the bill is to protect an area such as those outside the city of Haines. If they choose not to be part of a consolidation or merger, they should have that right. And if we, by changing the effective date, can provide them that right, I think it is incumbent upon us to do that.
On the other hand, they've been going through the process all along, and to change it at the 11th hour is not necessarily the right thing either.
Let me explain that to me. First, if we add an effective date, it's not a title change, it's considered a technical.
Right. The Senate can add an effective date to a bill that's considered a technical change within our uniform rules, because the House can simply decline to vote to pass that effective date and still enact the bill. It doesn't defeat the bill. So the Senate, by adding an effective date, does not in any way bind the House to accept that judgment. And from that point of view, it's always been viewed as a technical title change when the one House or the other adds an effective date, because it does not prevent the defeat of that effective date separately by the second House in the concurring vote.
And then the threshold for them is 2/3, it's not a simple majority, yes. like a normal.
Right, a special effective date must be adopted by each House by 2/3 vote of each of the Houses.
Can you tell me what's going on at Haines? I mean, they had a...
We're going to listen to the mayor here.
Oh,
just
okay.
Here,
well, I'll hear the history then.
Yeah, you'll hear the history. Yeah. You guys can just stay right there if you like. And,
who is the mayor?
We'll,
the audience now. Oh,
okay. We're back over here. I thought this was my teleconference sheet. I'm sorry. Don't sit right there.
I'm sorry. They didn't testify unless they had to.
Well, we want to hear the story. We want to hear the Haines story.
Yeah.
So.
Story according to Haines.
If it's all right with the chair, I'd like our economic development manager to sit with us here.
Sure.
Thank you,
sure.
Senator.
You may. You know, not to put you on the spot, but Senator Phelps just wasn't familiar with what's going on there, so if you can give us the short version.
Yeah, real short.
Well, if you'll bear with me, please, Senators. I'm somewhat of a neophyte here to this process. I'm certainly not a neophyte to Haines. In answer to your question, we have gone through the process. This would be our second time. The first time we were at, not during my tenure, I would qualify, we were at odds with the borough over some litigation involvements between the city and some private parties. However, the borough sought not to support us in our original. If I'm meandering here, please stop me, because I'm trying to fill you in as you ask. That failed by a matter of 3 votes, so that's
right.
When we got
the
there.
Merger.
The consolidation.
Okay.
Since that time, we have generated and re-established a rapport within our borough and our city. And I would at this time ask you to please consider that we are a third-class borough, or keep in mind if you will, we are a third-class borough, and we are very, very much a part of the borough, the city of Haines Residence, to the tune of approximately 75% of the vote. Okay, having digressed, and I'll get back to the point. We're in the second process now of consolidation, of which I indicated we have, and this can be certainly proven as a resolution passed by the borough, as well a companion resolution passed by the city, to go ahead in accord with the city from the borough, as opposed to the first petition, the second one now, to get us to a vote, which we are at, believe it or not, the potential today. The Boundary Commission, as I understand it, have gone through the review period. We met on March 9th with the Boundary Commission. The review period falls out today, if you will, and the presumably beyond that point, we would go to the Division of Elections that, of course, sets a date for our process. Now, in this process, we have gone forth with approximately 27 months of work. We have arrived at this point, and we find the potential, and not necessarily the intent, but the potential for a bill introduced that could, if you will, torpedo the good intentions of both the City of Haines and the Borough Assembly of Haines in order to get us to a vote timely. Is this helping, Senator, or am I going around the point? Am I helping fill in what you want? We're here now. We're there.
You had a vote. Let me just go through it. You had a vote for failed by 3 votes to consolidate.
The first time.
Overall. Inside, outside.
Absolutely.
Overall, 3 votes.
Absolutely.
Now you're repetitioning again.
Yes.
Same process to have another vote.
Yes. Right? With the support of the Borough Assembly, which was not present at the first go-round.
And this bill right here would impede you from doing that, right?
It absolutely has the potential to do just that.
Okay. Are there questions?
I got it now.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So you would not be in favor of an immediate effective date?
I would.
This doesn't affect you other than that.
It doesn't affect us at all. I'll requalify it. It would not affect us at all, except if there was some kind of a date placed on it or a moratorium or anything of that nature that stopped the due process which we have diligently followed for the last 27 months.
Are you anticipating a special election?
Yes, we are.
So you don't think this will hold off till October? Is mainly what
I would hope not. We anticipate with the good offices of the Division of Elections, we anticipate an election within the terms of the law, 30 days within 30 days, and maximum of within 90 days. So we are, if you will, right on the cusp of this particular problem here, so we need...
So this would take effect if it's signed by the governor and passes 90 days after the bill. After the governor signs it,
or you can put
9 days after he signs it, Tam?
Yeah.
The effective date?
Yeah, or if he comes forward without his signature.
Right.
90 days after enactment.
Or
you can put January 1st, 2003.
Yeah.
Thing too.
Right. Okay.
And I have one last, if I may presume, one last comment. Were an effective date not to be a reality, I understand the percentage of the House, and so it is equally true that some verbiage in the bill could be introduced to specifically exempt the Haines third-class borough. We are in process now, and on the something of that nature would be most helpful.
Okay, January 1st, 2003.
Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah. Thank you. Vinny, do you need something? Okay, let's take a short IB, so come back to her, please. We have 3 people in Haines at the volunteer site, and I don't have your name, so you can just pick whatever order you'd like to testify on. Just tell us your name, tell us your name and affiliation, and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, I can't test people with a serious time constraint because of another teleconference.
Well, I don't... So you're trying to tell me I have more than one side on? Is that what's going on?
They're the only ones on.
Okay. We only have the Haines volunteer site.
Okay.
Did I say Homer or Haynes when I said it before?
No, I think you said Haynes.
Tell her just
go. We misunderstood, yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, have you got people there to testify?
Yes, we do.
That's rock and roll.
Okay, have them come to the mic and give me their names and their affiliation, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This is Peter Gall. I'm speaking for myself. And I am also speaking to you as former chairman of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee, which I chaired in 1985 and 6 when the municipal code revision took place. As you know, at that time, many years of work went into that code, and I'd like to speak to a few issues. I'd like to thank you first for holding this hearing and for the work that I'm familiar with that you've done to support the rights of individual citizens in relation to their government. And to pay my respects to my former colleague, Senator Phillips, and if she's present, Senator Lincoln, and to thank Representative Whitaker for his introduction of this legislation. I reference my work with community and regional affairs because at the time that the municipal code was revised, this language existed that you're amending today by this bill. On our committee, we had libertarians, a multi-partisan effort, just as this bill has been a multi-partisan effort. We worked with Senator Sturgeluski, who was chairing the Senate committee at the time, and felt we had a good consensus product. Unfortunately, looking back on it, I feel that there was an oversight, and that oversight has to do with local option, in this case, consolidation. It's important to stress that they are that this bill and this issue is limited to local options insofar as the comments by Senator Phillips and other remarks that have to do with the utilization of municipal services by people not living in a municipality. When that issue becomes severe, it's an opportunity for annexation. There's an opportunity for legislative oversight. But with a local option situation like this one, there is no opportunity for legislative oversight, and we depend upon the will of the people to determine how their government will be structured. Consequently, I support this legislation and consider it to be not innovative, but a correction of an oversight and error, which I take partial responsibility for. I think it should have been addressed in 1985 or even prior. And I'm grateful that you're all together and dealing with it now. I agree with Tam Cook, to whom I also send my respects. I believe the amendment is a technical amendment in order to clarify the nature of the legislation, and I support that as well. And because various members of the committee, Mayor Haynes and others, will cite properly the highly contentious nature of any kind of municipal reorganization effort, I'm going to limit my comments to those which I believe pertain to the overall public policy questions, recognizing that in each individual municipal debate on such a subject, there will be fine points that will come up and can be rightfully argued. However, the general provisions that you're dealing with need to apply uniformly to everyone, and it's in that context that I speak to you. I believe the legislation with its amendment are vital because without them, citizens can find themselves moved into a municipal structure or have their municipal structure eliminated without their consent and without the opportunity for legislative oversight, such as exists with an annexation. Comment just briefly on, I think really I don't need to elaborate, I'd answer any questions of course, but that's the basic bottom line. What this legislation with its amendment does is ensure that when a municipal structural change takes place for a group of people, those people have a right to be heard vanish under the vote of a larger municipality that may wish to annex them. If a larger municipality wishes to do so, they can use the annexation process, and once again, there is a legislative oversight provision to deal with possible inequities. But in this case, as we noted, let's say in Haynes, one municipality involved had a 75% voting margin over a group of other individuals in the non-city part of the Haynesboro, and I think that that 25% have a right to be heard independently, and that's my comment on the local issue. I guess I apologize for referencing the local point, but I think the issue of representation is key here and needs to be protected.
No. Okay.
I'd like to comment on a couple of things that were said in the committee, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Quickly.
With regard to two cities and an intervening piece of borough, a municipality does not have to necessarily be contiguous at all times, and I don't think that that issue would be affected by this legislation. Finally, I think the effective date of time is very important, and I urge you to consider that. I think it's necessary if the intent of the bill is to cover everything that goes forward from the time the bill passes. Otherwise, as was explained to you, the bill will pass, but the intent of the bill will not be implemented. And finally, I'd like to urge you to take prompt action in managing the bill through the legislative process, because, of course, until the bill passes, the issue of the effective date is not consequential. I'd like to thank you for your patience with me, and I'll turn the microphone over to the next citizen.
Thank you.
Hello, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm Carolyn Wyson. I'm a resident outside the city of Haynes, and I would like to preface my comments by stating first that the Borough Assembly has vacillated on the present petition to consolidate. A year ago, the Borough Assembly voted to oppose the petition. However, recently that position has changed and to a support position. However, this vote was not unanimous, and I appreciate those representatives who have raised concerns, which include some that I will mention today. I urge you to pass HB 296 as amended, and to pass it with an effective date which would include Haynes upcoming consolidation. This amendment would bring reform desperately needed to correct deficiencies in the consolidation model under the current and then allow passage area-wide. Under current statute and local boundary commission procedures, there are no checks and balances on how the charter is formed or voted on. Consolidation as it currently exists does not encourage meaningful dialogue for all residents who live, whose lives would be greatly affected by such a consolidation. We need to change the area-wide vote to a vote inside and outside city limits so that rural concerns are seriously addressed by the Charter Commission and the resulting charter reflects the concerns of the voters. It is the power of the vote that brings accountability to any body requesting consolidation. Without this change in voting, consolidation will remain a type of annexation without representation. Consolidation bypasses due process, and I urge you to put the checks and balances into this process and give all voters, both inside and outside city limits, a meaningful voice. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else, sir?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tim June, and we have one or two others. And I would like to voice my support for HB 296 and also the proposed amendment, although we don't have a copy of the amendment. It does sound like it addresses what we'd like to see here. This process has been, as Mayor Blatt said, ongoing for a number of years in Haynes. In fact, I think this is about our sixth or seventh election on trying to change our form of government. I think one thing I would like to inform the committee in terms of the history of this particular issue, there was a annexation of the city about 3 years ago. The city population was around 1,250.
Okay.
They annexed about 600 people recently. In that annexed area, there were about 80% of those that were opposed to the annexation. However, they're now part of the city. And we now have a the population split between the new larger city, and the outside is about 1,800 to 600, just a ballpark. So again, this this effort has been ongoing in terms of trying to gain control of the larger borough. And I think that certainly, in terms of the representation that we've had, the two borough assembly members that voted against this consolidation effort are both representatives from the outside area, which is exactly why we need this. It brought that to bear. Without those, we're going to lose that. One of the points that we've been constantly trying to bring up in the last 2 or 3 years with the city's petition is that they do not allow districting, and we're trying to get some representation from those areas that will be outside the city in the form of at least districting, so we'll have one or two members that can bring our concerns to the table. So I thank you for your time, and I would also like to ask you to expedite this if it can, so that it could work in this particular effort. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Next, please.
Yes, this is Ron Weisson, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I also thank you for allowing us to be a part of this teleconference. I ask for your immediate and timely support to amend HB 296. I respectfully ask this bill be amended to reflect its original intent that all separate bodies to a consolidation must pass it separately, both in the city and outside the city, and considering Haines' upcoming election that the legislation be enacted upon signing by the governor. The arguments for this are as old as democracy itself, and there is good reason why no consolidation effort in the state has yet to pass. Recent decisive failures to consolidate were Ketchikan and Fairbanks by a 4-1 margin. Unification requires separate passage by those voters of a city and those voters outside of city. The consolidation, undemocratic way of joining these same two communities by an area-wide vote is merely a glorified annexation. Government needs to learn from the business community the authentic way that communities merge together. Shareholders of each separate community, of each separate company, must approve of a merger before it happens. Business has long known that. Without shareholder support of a merger of two companies, the likelihood of a successful post-merge company would be less. I think we had a recent example of that with Compaq Computer and Hewlett Packard. We have a contest presently going on where Hewlett himself is suing his company, and there's disgruntlement there because of the close nature of the vote. And I think that the same attitude, the same way to join communities, as far as I'm concerned, a consolidation should require a supermajority for it to happen, not just a majority. And that would reflect the happy attitude of those segments of the community that would be joined in that consolidation. Let us reflect in our action what the business community knows. Let us reflect in our action what unification of government knows, and not for less with consolidation. If consolidation is not brought up to standard by amending HB 296, then I ask for your best effort to abolish consolidation as a method of joining communities. A great deal of time, effort, and monies have been spent around the state promoting what has heretofore been failed consolidation attempts. And I know you're looking at this year, especially fiscal responsibility, and considering the use of permanent fund, income tax, or a sales tax. It seems to me that this would be a perfect time to abolish efforts in the state that have cost you a lot of money and none of which have been successful. I do ask, on the other hand, if you are not going that way, to support that amendment. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ron. Next.
You okay?
Okay.
So, Phillips. I have one more question to the sponsor. Okay. Was this bill, your intent of the bill, was aimed at general public policy or aimed at taking care of the situation in Haines?
I wasn't aware of the situation at Haines.
Okay. One has a critical question that needs to be answered. Okay.
Okay, Tam, could you come back up, please? The Bonding Commissioner has asked several questions. I brought up several points in their letter, and I asked Tam to respond to them. Because I don't expect to be back over here Monday for the take advantage of what we have her. Some are legal type questions, so if you would do that, just read the question first so those on teleconference can hear what we're talking about.
Who's not going to be here on Monday?
I don't think Tam. I'm not going to have her come back over Monday. She's taking advantage of her while she's here.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I presume, are you talking about the points that begin on the first page?
On the second page.
On the second page, just the last 4 points?
Last 4 points, okay. Yes, please.
The first one is apparently the point that they're making. It's not a question as I read it. The change would disenfranchise borough voters who are also residents of the city proposed for consolidation from voting in a borough election. And certainly that point of view can be urged and is a sensible way to look at this. I have no particular reaction to that statement. And that would be in the sense, I presume, that, for example, taking the Haines example, that the residents of the city of Haines, from the point of view that they are also residents of the borough of Haines, would not be permitted to be voting with respect to their status as borough residents. And that's, sure, you can certainly look at it that way. The second point they make is that the proposed amendment repudiates the principle of one person, one vote, and the principle of majority rule. That seems to me also a philosophical, it depends on your point of view, I suppose. Certainly everybody involved gets to vote. It's just that we're parsing the categories and we're requiring that the approval occur in smaller categories than it's certainly existing law. And in that sense, perhaps it could be argued that it dilutes the one person, one vote principle. The third point here is the proposed amendment may contravene the provisions of the Federal Voting Rights Act. That I don't quite know how to respond to. I don't know in what sense it is intended. My understanding roughly of the Federal Voting Rights Act is that it's intended to prevent discrimination based on race. And I don't quite understand how that would play out in this type of an election, per se, unless they're suggesting that an urban area consists more predominantly of one racial group than the rural part of the borough, perhaps? I don't know. That's a bit attenuated for me to react to.
Okay. The last one isn't really a question either. It's just...
Yeah.
The last one, the application of the change on an expedited basis to a pending election would be unfair. So that's not fair for you to answer that one. So, okay, I was mainly concerned about those two in the middle, the one person, one vote, and also the not being in line with the Federal Voting Rights Act.
Most of this stuff is like we do with everything, and we're setting policy.
All right. Yeah. 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 Tam, we have Senator Austin would like you to draft an amendment. You still want to do that?
I'd like to see that.
that has the petitioner can have the option of having all or nothing in the petition. So if one municipality doesn't do that, then it votes it out, the other ones could go ahead with the merger.
Okay, so it would be at the option of the petitioner, depending on how they craft the petition.
Right.
Okay.
And it's my intent, we're going to hold the bill, but it's my intent to bring it back up Monday. Mary, so remind me of that. So I want to do something with the bill, so this will let us stew on it over the week and get Pam a little time to draft the amendments, and then we can take a look at it.
Does this have another committee of referral back to us?
No, I don't know. Mary, what is...
He has two more, Judiciary and Finance.
Oh, great.
Oh. Well, we'll get it done as much as we can here. Maybe they don't have to mess with it that much. Senator Phillips, yeah.
You also want to decide the effective date, too, as well, Monday?
I'm not sure I want to see an effective date, but I'm going to follow the lead of Senator Austin.
So here's what I was thinking, Mr. Chairman. I'll just lay my cards down without, you know, I have to do some more research on this thing, but it seems to me the sponsor said it was unrelated to this situation in Haynes, and yet you're trying to do a public policy question for the future. January 1st, 2003, effective date would, you know, and that'll set a new set of rules for anybody in the future based on these rules.
I would say, Senator Phillips, that you just say it doesn't affect any petitions that are pending
currently
with the commission.
Okay.
And then you're not changing the middle of the rules halfway through the game.
Yeah.
Instead of worrying about an effective date. That's,
all right. Well,
that's what I would suggest. This has
nothing to do with it.
Because there could be some glitches in the system that nobody's seen yet that'll stop the Boundary Commission from making a decision for a little while. I don't know. They drag their feet in Homer for the Boundary Commission's not my favorite agency. I think that if I could, I'd probably eliminate them. But they're probably a necessary evil.
Mr. Chairman, maybe we could have Constitution draft what you just...
Oh, yeah, would you maybe draft that as a... Well, just put that in there about...
My understanding is that I will be drafting two separate amendments, one for the chairman and one for Senator Osterman.
Right.
So
okay, and then so we'll put this aside with the amendment pending. We've moved the amendment, but we'll just leave it dangling there. Anybody else want to testify on this while we get a little hot and ready to go? Okay, hearing none, then we will close this out and adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much.